Shilas, and see if we can figure out what the connection between these two is, and hopefully understand a very fascinating sugya in the process. Story number one. He's a store owner, factory owner, who wanted to keep his factory open on Shabbos. It's more productive, didn't want to take off one-seventh of the week for production. On the other hand, he knows it's not a good thing, shouldn't have a store open on Shabbos. So he goes to the Rav and he says he wants to make a deal. If the Rav will work with him to figure out, with one of these technological and halacha combinations, how can we figure out how everything that has to be done, all the machinery, etc., in the factory, how can we make it all done with only Isuri Darabanan? Even if it would be a little bit inefficient, but if you work with me, we figure out a way to do Isuri Darabanan, I'm willing to have the factory open only with Isuri Darabanan. So now you're the Rav. Do you make the deal? If you don't work with him, he said, I'm just going to keep on going like I do 6 days a week. Yisurim daraisa, left and right. Or do you work with him and you figure out a way that it should be open with only derabbanans? Okay, so there you go. That's the shaila number one. Shaila number two is even better. This is the ultimate halachic revenge of the nerd story. True story, Maisa Shahaya. There was a nerd, God bless him, in high school, and Hashem, everything is zed umazeh. So what Hashem gives, he takes, and what he takes, he gives. So this boy, fitting the stereotype, didn't have such great social graces, wasn't exactly in the cool crowd. However, what he didn't have in social graces and coolness, he had in brains. Specifically, nerds are usually smart at science. So what happened? The cool kids, the big strong bully kids, used to bully him. In fact, among other things, they used to take his lunch every day. He'd have his lunch hanging in his backpack in the locker. He'd come out for lunch period and the locker was always open and the lunch was gone. So after some time of this, he got sick of it. And he went home that night, and because Baruch Hashem, God made him a nerd, he made him smart at science, he created his own poison. And he put it in his bologna sandwich. And he brought it to school that day. Sure enough, he comes out of the school period, and he goes, it's lunchtime, he goes into the locker, and his sandwich is gone. And he's out in the playground with all the other kids during the little recess break they have, and all of a sudden, in the corner in the area where all the cool kids are hanging out, all of a sudden one of the kids is like, ah! And starts choking, falls to the ground. All the other kids, come call an ambulance, come call an ambulance. And of course he runs up and says, ah, it's you! Die, sucker! I don't know if he said that or not. So the point was he was not embarrassed at all about doing it. P.S. the boy was okay. They got him, they gave Ipecac or something, whatever it was. They got the poison out of him in time and he survived. As far as I know, this story happened in a public school, I believe in the United States. Believe. And sometime later, a shaila was asked to Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, who's one of the great poskim, lives in Bnei Brak. They asked him if this would be a Jewish school, if this would be a frum school, because of course there's never any hazing in frum schools, right? But if there would have been such a story in a Jewish school in a frum yeshiva, was the nerd allowed to do what he did? You allowed to do such a thing? The two very interesting shailas, and surprisingly, they're connected. The story with the factory on Shabbos, and the story with the Revenge of the Nerds. And they're connected because of a very interesting and not that well-known halacha, which is used by poskim in both cases, although in different ways, as we'll see, called Haliteu L'Rosh of Yamos, and that is the topic of our shiur. Now the truth is that as a halachic topic, it has almost zero connection with our parsha, except for the fact that it's in Parshas Toldos is the only time in all of Tanakh, as far as I know, that this shoresh, this form of this word Haliteu, is actually used. And since it's Shas, no one really knows what it means. The closest we have is a connection, perhaps, at least according to some poskim, to the pasuk in our parsha. Of course, the pasuk I'm referring to is the famous pasuk in the opening Aliyah, when Esav comes home after a long day of raping, pillaging, murdering, and doing other good things that he liked to do. And it's a hard day, it's a hard job, and he's exhausted. And he says to, of course, to Yaakov, Haliteini noa min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh hayev hanofi. Right? In a very, it doesn't just mean give me. It's Haliteini, clearly the impression you get, it wasn't just like give me, it was give me. And starving, give me this lentil soup. And of course Yaakov does, he makes the deal with him for the Bechora, and the rest is history. So this word, Haliteini, as far as I know, appears only once in Tanakh. And it also appears in one context, in one halacha in Shas. It's in a Mishnah, which is then quoted by the Gemara. But in terms of an original source, the Gemaras are just quoting this one Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in Shas. And the Mishnah is in Ma'aser Sheni, in the opening Mishnah of Parak Hei. And the Mishnah talks about as follows. Imagine you are a farmer, and you have crops that come year after year, which they used to leave out to dry. Either it was growing on the field, or sometimes they would have already harvested it, and they were leaving it to dry out and stuff. And as you know, there are all sorts of halachos which require us to do things with our produce, midaraisa. And many years, you have produce which either is not going to be mutter to eat at all. For example, orla, the first 3 years of a fruit crop. Kerem Ravai, in the fourth year, you're allowed to eat it, but only in Yerushalayim. And then you have, of course, other kinds of crops where they're tevel, because you haven't yet taken truma or meiser from them. So the Mishnah discusses the following. If I'm a farmer, and I have produce that's arla or kerem ravai, which you're not allowed to eat, or at least not certainly not in the farm, and perhaps not at all if it's arla, and it's outside still in my field, do I need to put some kind of a sign or a marker letting people know what the produce is? By the way, warning dog or something, the signs? So do I have to put a warning sign, kerem ravai, here? So this is a machlokes tanoim. The Mishnah says, Kerem Ravai, the first opinion is the Tanakama. Mitzayinin oso bekozuzos adama. Yes, says the Tanakama, you have to put a sign, you have to let people know that this is Arla or Kerem Ravai. So with certain things, you use clods of clay or dirt, b'shel Arla, b'charsis, you use some kind of a clay or another material. Different ways. Then the Mishnah even continues and gives other examples. Let's say there's a kever, right? They didn't just have, fancy cemeteries like we do. It could be just in the backyard or the corner of your farm. You might have, that's where you buried Zaidi or something. So in the days of the Midrash, you had issues of Tum and Tara. So the Mishnah says you should be mitzayin that. You should let people know. Right? It's your property, but you have a responsibility to let people know the status of things so they shouldn't get themselves into trouble. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. No way. During the Shemitah year, right, it happens to be that in the fourth year of the cycle, I planted a tree. So now it's 3 years later, so it's still Arla, it's only the third year, but it's also the Shemitah year. It says of Shimon Gamliel, if it's the Shemitah year we're talking about, but you have fruit or whatever that is Arla or Truma, whatever, not Truma, because it would be, there's no Truma in Meister on the seventh year, but Arlar or Kamarabai. So Shimon Gamliel says, yeah, there I know that you should put up a sign. Rashi explains, what's the difference between Shemitah and the other years? Because the Shemitah year is Hefker, I don't really own it. And therefore, there's no reason why a passerby shouldn't be able to take it, except for the fact that I tell him it's Arlar, he can't take it. So now that we see Shimon Gamliel, what do we see? There's an amazing thing about the Tanakama. I'm surprised that there wasn't a lot of hands on that. The Tanakama is talking about who? Who are we protecting with our signs of Arla, danger, beware? We're protecting a thief. Right? Imagine it's as if you go to sleep one night and you have, I don't know, something that could be dangerous or something in the house, and you know, your wife perfectly listens and says, you know, did you lock up? Did you put on the alarm? Oh yes, and by the way, don't forget! You know, put that warning sign, you know, meat is, you know, I think that meat was bad, you know, or the milk was rotten, you know, I bought the meat and it didn't taste good, I'm bringing it back to the butcher tomorrow. But you know, if a goslin would come in, he might want to help himself to a steak. We wouldn't want him to eat something and get sick. So let's make sure to put up a sign. It sounds absurd. You know, or I just, you know, I just fixed the tiles, or I know that there's like a tile, like, you know, on the front of the house that's loose or something, you know. Don't trip, don't hurt yourself. It's crazy, right? But that's what the Tanakhama says. I should be worried that maybe a goslin's going to come into my field. Poor goslin, he might eat Arlo. So I should put up a sign. No, you can steal my stuff, but make sure you don't eat it. It's Arlo. So Shimon Gamliel says, that's crazy. I'm not responsible for someone who steals my stuff. Let him go eat it. That's my responsibility to worry that he's going to eat Arlo? Shmita here, it's not mine, it's Hefker. So then I couldn't be worried. Think about it for 1 second. And then the Gemara mentions, the Mishnah mentions a third very famous opinion of the Tznuim. The Tznuim were like the Tznuim Yishur Sadin. They went even further than the Tanakhama. Tanakhama put up a sign so that someone shouldn't take it. The Tznuim were worried that maybe someone won't see the sign. Or maybe someone will be so tempted to eat it anyway. And so what did they do? They did a whole process which itself has its own halachic parameters, which is not at all our topic. Whereby, basically, they set up a system so that in case someone should actually take the food, and this works with Karam Ravai, not with Arla, that the Kedusha of the Karam Ravai would be nifte, would be redeemed on the coins. Right? Just like Maaser Sheni, you have to eat it in Yerushalayim or be poded on coins and bring the coins to Yerushalayim. So too you could do the same thing in Karam Ravai. So just in case someone might take this Karam Ravai, the Tznuim, they were such tzaddikim. First they put up a warning. Don't take it. It's Karam Ravai. And in case someone took, then a failsafe, he's okay. The ganef didn't do an aver. Because I put it as poded on mine. Those are the three opinions in the Mishnah. Tanakhama, Shmuel Gamliel, and then the Tznuim. Yeah.
So why would you say, what's as far that the sign itself would work anyway? I mean, why can't you say if they're going to steal it anyway, that they don't necessarily care about Arlo?
Well, that's we'll have to see as part of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion why he says we don't care. But the reason that I would think that it would work, let's say imagine it's poison, right?
Yeah.
Just because I'm a ganef doesn't mean I want to eat poison.
But I'm saying now it's just to a zero. I mean,
okay, good. So you're worried. Your question is why would we think he would care? So that's going to be a very relevant discussion when we get to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But the Tanakhama, I assume, would say, listen, it's not my responsibility to worry whether he would care or wouldn't care. I can't be responsible for someone else who would care with my stuff. Okay? The Gemara in Baba Kama in Perek Maruba, you guys know Baba Kama here? Anyway, the seventh Perek of Baba Kama in Perek Maruba, the Gemara quotes this Mishnah and adds just a little bit of an elaboration on Shimon Gamliel. Says the Gemara, Omer Bevedar, Amurim, Beshvius, Hefker ninu, as we said, the food is hefker. There's no reason why the person can't take it. Aval b'shar shnei ha-shavua, paliteu l'rasha v'yomus. Same lashon as the pasuk in our parsha. Paliteu l'rasha v'yomus. Says Rav Shimon Gamliel, if it's the regular 6 years of the cycle, what do I care whether he takes Arlo, he takes Karam Ravai or Tevel or who knows what. He's stealing my stuff. Haliteu l'rasha. Now it's hard to know even how to translate the word haliteu actually in this context. I saw somewhere that it said choke. It's hard to know, but again, just like in our parsha, it was like this very vigorous, give me. So this haliteu l'rasha v'yomus is not just like, oh, if it's okay, he'll be, you know, Shmuel Gamliel is saying, you know, die, sucker. You know, kind of, no guilt here. Haliteu l'rasha v'yomus is very strong language. That's the Gemara. How do we paskin? The Rambam says in Maaser Sheni, Mishalo neta revai, Vishnasa shmita sheyada kol shove, Sarach letzainu b'kodazos. So who's he paskin like? Shimon Gamliel, the Rambam quotes the halacha, but he dafka limits it to what year? To the shmita year. So this has become very important for us to try to understand now, Haliteu l'rasha v'yomus, because it's not just one opinion among three. This is actually the opinion that we paskin like. So you asked before, well, what's so surprising about, you asked about the Shiloh, about the Shabbos. The question here is, in a similar way, when we hear about this halacha, and we see we pass from Shmuel Gamliel, is this a surprising halacha, or is this a understandable halacha? So on one level, you know, especially if you grow up with a sense of private property, you know, it's mine is mine, you know, who told you to take it? A certain sense of, you know, what should I care? Question though is that really consistent with other Jewish values? Is that really consistent with other mitzvos? What does this seem to rub up against? I don't care what happens to the Russia. Go let them jump off a bridge. It's like the Talmudic version of jump off a bridge. You know, the heck with you. Since when do we say the heck with you? We're supposed to care about other people. What other halakhic values are similar? Lifnei Iver. I put out the produce without being mitzayin it. It's as if it's Lifnei Iver. Maybe he would say, if I would have known it was wrong, I wouldn't have taken it. Who else? Any other halakhic values? That's not what I asked. Any other halakhic values? So the one who most famously, not the only one, but the one who most famously asked this question is the Chavos Yair. Chavos Yair in a tshuva, and number two, goes to town on this halakha. Says, I don't understand. Says, Ani tamam ma'od alashon zeh. What is going on? The hamashmos, the pshitos, the pashtus, again, you have to understand, the lashon of haliteyu, such a strong lashon, says the Chavos Yair, it doesn't seem like we're just, you know, saying, well, in this one case, because anyway, he's a gazlan, so in this case, as he's stealing, don't care, you know, we don't have to care about the secondary avera. Says Chavos Yair, it seems like it's more than that. The lashon is so strong, especially when you think of it, he doesn't quote it, but the biblical source which we started with of Haliteu, it sounds as if, says Chavos Yair, that if somebody, this person is a Russian, says, I can even give it to him. I can put the Isser in his face. How could this be possible? It's inconceivable. After all, we're worried about people doing averus b'shogeg. We try to prevent people from doing averus b'mezin. We care about everybody. Somebody mentioned before, well, if he was going to steal, he's not going to care about Arla. Says the Chavos Yair, halachically, that's completely wrong. We don't assume because that person does one avera, he's necessarily going to do another. Kol shekeinim chaver minei, the machalos asuros of Arla or Kerem Ravai, or especially would be Tevel, are worse and more serious. So we all know people who have Yetzirah for money. So the fact that the guy stole is one thing, but did he eat treif? Right? It reminds me, whenever I read this tshuva, of the guys, you know, sitting up in federal or state prison on the Glatt Kosher meal plan. You know, there was a story not long ago, I think it was last year, of a certain guy who, God knows how much money he stole, Chil Hashem he created. But it was a big thing, his lawyer was suing because he didn't like the hashkacha of the food in jail. Not that they were giving him treif. You have prisoners, and unfortunately every now and then you hear about this in American jails, who they refuse to give him kosher. That's you could say, a real civil rights issue. But this guy was getting food from a hechsher, but it wasn't the hamish hechsher that he's mapping on, because he's so frum. Because he's sitting in jail, because he's a big guy. So says the Chavos Yair, just because a guy stole, we all know, that doesn't mean he's going to be very mapping on kashrus. I would never eat Arlo. Steal from you, no problem. That's why I'm a Yetzirah. So why should we not think that he's going to care? And he ends B'tzarech Ian. This is a powerful lashon. Says the Chavos Yair, from Gedolei Achronim, because I don't understand. How can we paskin this way? What kind of concept is this? I don't understand. Whoever can give some kind of a salve, some kind of a solution to this great pain, I don't understand. I'll give him the title, an expert doctor. Heal my soul, says the Chavos Yair. And he leaves, that's how he ends the tshuva. I don't understand. How can I balance? How can I synthesize this halacha, which is quoted not only in the Mishnah, but also by the Rambam? How does that fit in with our other halachas? Yeah.
Granted, it's possible. We can't. We don't want the prisoners to be over and under. Watch that. If someone's stealing,
Fantastic, fantastic. You're mechaben to the Chazon Ish. We're going to see it in a few minutes, okay? So good day's work to be mechaben to the Chazon Ish. Yeah.
You know, the other way, that the Ganesh is doesn't care about any of these things, like Be'er and Chaver, all of these things, he's making you do it back to him.
Right? So you're mechaben to other Achorim, good. So obviously, this is quoted in the Rambam, so we're going to have an answer for this. Chavzor doesn't have an answer. But Baruch Hashem, by the end of tonight, you'll have answers. So broadly speaking, as far as I could tell, broadly speaking, there are three different approaches in the Achronim to understanding this topic. Every now and then you run into a topic, and this is one of them, and I'm not exactly sure why. Perhaps because it's mainly a Mishnah, but it is also a Gemara Bava Kama. So this is a topic which gets very little, some, and we'll see it, but very little attention in the Rishonim. Most of the discussion of this topic is in the Achronim, and specifically, as we'll see, in a lot of the Shailos V'Tshuva literature. So, for whatever reason, most of the sources will be Achronim, because that's most of the people who speak about the topic. Basically, three approaches. How do we understand Halitayu, and how does it fit in? That's the big issue, that's our tension. How does Halitayu fit in with other issues which seem to be butting up against it? So one basic approach comes from a number of Achronim, and it's based on a Shach. A Shach is talking about a case of Lifnei Iver, where the halacha is quoted in Shulchan Aruch that at certain times of the year, you're not supposed to sell certain material if we're choshed that in that time of the year that people are going to use it for Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So if you had to make a modern day version of that, maybe you don't be in the pine tree business in December, that kind of thing. If you sell crosses, which you usually use for one thing, but you probably shouldn't sell to somebody you know is going to bow to it or something like that. That's halacha in Shulchan Aruch. However, the Shulchan Aruch does leave open the door in certain cases for a heter. So trying to figure out when is it mutter, when is it usur, that's the Nosei Kelim and Shulchan Aruch are working on that. So it comes along the Shach and says it's not a problem, it's not a contradiction, it's not an inconsistency. Even though in certain cases maybe the Shulchan Aruch writes there's no Lifnei Iver, Lifnei Iver is an Isur Doraisa. However, he says, Yesh Machmir v'sorv and v'komach v'sindu rabbanu nikla. Just because there's no Isur Doraisa doesn't mean it becomes mutter. Maybe there's an Isur Darabanan. After all, if you're familiar with the Lifnei Iver Sugya, you know that the classic case of Lifnei Iver, the Gemara says, is what's called Trei Avra Denara, right? Two sides of the river, where the person couldn't get it without you. So let's say I'm not the only guy who sells crosses. Lots of pine tree and cross salesmen down the block. So it's Chad Avra Denara. He could easily get it himself. So the Gemara says, if it's Chad Avra Denara, the person could easily get the Isur from somebody else, then it's not an Isur Daraisa. Says the Shach, yes, but according to some Rishonim, the Machmirim hold it just because there's no Isur Daraisa, that means it's Mutter. There's an Isur Darabonan called Lafrushi Meisura. Even Bechad Arba Denara, it's also Darabonan to sell it to him or to give it to him. So in that case, says the Shach, then he adds, and here's where he says something that became very controversial. Those cases where we say it's Asr Mir Rabbanan, Mayri B'Yisrael, Shuchai Labushim Yisur. Even though the Gemara, very famous, what are the two famous cases in the Gemara of Lifnei Iver? You can't give what to what and what to what? Two famous cases in the Gemara? Kosyai and Lenozir? And what's the other example? Eirim and Achai? Leben Noach. So in the Gemara itself, the famous case that's given applies even to a non-Jew. So we know that Lifnei Iver applies to a non-Jew. You can't help a Goy doing a Be'er. It's not something you just can't do to a Jew. You can't do it to a Goy either, if it's one of the Shemitz of Leben Noach. But says the Shach, that's only the Isur D'Oraisa of Lifnei Iver. But what if it's Chad Avra Denara? There are pine tree salesmen up and down the street. It's not like he can only get his Avodah Zarah from me. So then it's Chad Avra Denara. Says the Shach, even the Machmirim will hold you can't sell there because it's Isur D'Rabbanan. That's for Yisrael. However, he continues, Mash'en kein ba'akum b'Yisrael mumar, eino chayiv l'hafrish. For everybody, there's an Isur D'Oraisa of Lifnei Iver. But if it's a case where there's no Oraisa anyway because it's one side of the river, says the Shach, it depends then. You distinguish between a Yisrael and a Goy. Now, if that's all he would have said, the Seder, that would be fine. But what did the Shach sneak in there? He didn't just distinguish between a Goy and a Yisrael. What did he add? Oh, all of a sudden, says the Shach, a non-from Jew, Yinat Chayiv Lafrushei Meisur. It's one thing to say a Goy. Here he says a fellow Jew. The same Shiloh we had. What do you mean a fellow Jew? Someone who's not from, I can help him do Averas anyway? What happened to Arvus? What happened to Hayach Tuchiyach? What happened to Lefnever? Okay, it's not Lefnever Daraisa, but still. And in fact, the Gilead Marsha, that's Rav Shlomo Eger, Rav Eger's son, and the Dagon Mervava, the Note of Yehuda, all these classical commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch say, what is going on with the Shach? How could he say such a thing? Who told him such a tremendous, controversial chiddush that by a Jew, Lo Chayev Lafrisho, says the Chuvas Beis Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Shmelkis, it's very simple. You know where he got it from? He got it from our halacha, our Gemara. After all, Halakha Rosh Yamos. He already stole. Once he stole, stamp. He's a Russia. And once he's a Russia, he may be Yisrael. But is Yisrael Mumer? Yisrael Russia? And you see from the Mishnah, you see from Shimon Gamliel, Halakha Rosh Yamos. Once a guy, so I can't give him the Arla. That'd be Lifnei Iver. But that I should be worried that he takes it on his own? That's not Lifnei Iver. That might be Lafrushim and Yisura. But I don't care about being Mafrusha, separating someone from an Avera if he's already a Russia. So in other words, approach number one, says Rav Yitzchak Shmelkis, says the Beis Yitzchak is, how could we say Lifnei Iver? What about all these other good halachos like Arvos? Says the Beis Yitzchak, yeah, and Chanami. Halitea Russia comes to teach us a Chiddush, that our love of fellow Jews is not equal. We don't, or we may love them equally, but our responsibility to all Jews is not equal. And that we are certain Jews, a Yisrael Mumer, a Russia, while we can't actively give him an Avera, but we have less of a responsibility of stopping him, I don't have time, okay? If he's going to do it on his own. So, Enechanami, Halitel Rosh Yomas is extreme halacha. It is a Chiddush. It's an important Chiddush to learn that the halacha does not always require us to worry about other people. That's the basis based on the Shach. Number two is a number of Achronim, including the Chazon Ish that I alluded to before, and the Radbaz, like we've shown him, who say, listen, no. This Beis Yitzchak has gone way too far. Chas v'shalom. We care about all Jews equally. We love all Jews, and we even want a Yisrael Mumer. Nebuch, he's a Mumer, but still, we don't want him to become more of a Mumer. And all things being equal, we'd be chayiv even to prevent him from doing an Avera. However, this is not all things being equal. After all, in this case, what happened? What happened in this case? He's stealing from me. Am I chayiv to go out of my way to, so to speak, lose money as a way of helping him? You know, if I put up a sign, Karim Rabbi here, it's as if I'm inviting, Ganovim, come, glad Hechter. Why else am I putting the sign up? So who learned this way? The Radbaz. The Radbaz was asked to Shaila. I'm going to just read it out. I'll tell it to you outside. The Radbaz, I said, there was two people arguing over money. And I know in my heart of hearts that I'm telling the truth and that he's lying. He's trying to steal from me. And it's the type of case, speaking of the beginning of Bar Mitzvah, where the halacha is going to be that he's going to have to take a shavua. Now, you know, taking a shavua in vain, a false shavua, shavua sheker, is a horrifically serious aveir. And we're in court, I keep on thinking any minute now he's going to be mode, or I'm hoping maybe the dayanim wants to say chayiv, and then what happens? The dayanim say, he's chayiv, take a shavua. And he's about to take it. He's going to take the shavua. If I press him, I have to be telling, take that shavua. You say you know me, take a shavua. 1 second, the guy asked Radbaz, maybe I shouldn't make him take a, maybe I should just be mocha. After all, if I follow through, I'm going to force him to take a shavua sheker. And maybe I'll be machshil him. Maybe at that point I should just walk away. That's the havamina that somebody asked the Radbaz. You know what the Radbaz said to him? In a nice way, you are a fool. You should be mochel to help him who's stealing from you not be over the shvua sheker? I'm going to reward him for being a gazlan and a shakran too? Chasid shota ani kare lecha, says the Radbaz. Which is a nice way of saying you're a fool. A chasid, but also a shota. It's not a good combination. It's less than canceling each other out. You don't come out even. Of course you don't have to do that. And how does the Radbaz know that? How does he know I don't have to do that? He quotes, Halitel Rosh Yamas. Now what does Halitel Rosh Yamas have to do with the Shua case? What's the common denominator between the two cases? Money. I care about you. If you want, if you're doing other Averis, so I don't want you to eat treif even though you're already Yisrael Mumer. In fact, you're eating treif, I don't want you to wear shatnez. I care about you. I'll do whatever I can to try to help you do better. But not when it comes at my own expense. That's too much to ask of a person. Says the Radbaz, Haidon Rosh Yamos tells us something very limited. And that is that even though I'm chayav to care about other people, not at my own expense. In a similar way, you know, in a certain sense, but different, is what was mentioned before. That's the Chazon Ish. This is how I understand the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish says, Time in Rav Shmuel Gamliel, Chalanotel v'Isser, Eren Ekrashini Machshilo. He took from my field. That counts as that I was Machshil him? On the contrary. Hari Hagavar Manua Machmas Isser. He wasn't supposed to take it to begin with. It's Manua, it's closed off to him, Machmas Isser. Which Isser? Not the Karmavai. Isser Gzela, it's not his. In other words, what I think the Chazon Ish is saying, which is exactly what you mentioned, was that we are allowed to go through life looking through rose-colored halachic glasses. I don't have to go to bed at night thinking that there's going to be a Jew who's going to be a ganef, and then once I think the worst of him, he's going to be a ganef. Well, then I don't want him to steal our law. Oh, that would be bad. Why do I have to assume that anyone's going to steal? I should go to bed at night thinking people are going to steal from me? I have a right to assume that no one's going to steal. Give me a chumrah that I have to be worried that he's going to be. On the contrary, if he was actually stealing and I saw him, maybe then I would tell him or something. But I should assume I have to be mitzayin my produce, warning Arla? Why should I have to worry about that? The only people who can eat it are my members of my family. No one's going to steal. Why should I assume no one's going to steal? In real life, people steal. Yeah, but I don't have to assume that. I'm allowed to assume that people are going to follow the halacha. In other words, again, even though it's different than the Radvaz, but there's a common denominator. And this is how I understand the Chazon Ish, that they're both saying that in theory, all things being equal, I care. I'm chayiv even a Yisrael Mumer, not like the Shach, not like the Beis Yitzchak. It's just that in this particular case, there's some other factor which exempts me. Either it's the money, or it's because I don't even have to assume there's ever going to be an Avera. So in those cases, I end up being exempt. But in theory, I would still be chayiv. Number three is a very fascinating one. This is what takes us now to similar cases, and specifically a case that the Tzitz Eliezer was asked about the factory being opened on Shabbos. But there's even more extreme cases. The Maharsham was asked a shaila about a man and woman who were involved in a relationship which was only Asur Mida Rabbanan. The details are not important, but basically they were holding the rabbis hostage. If you don't help us make this a kosher relationship, quote-unquote, if you don't help us, get around Issa Darabanan, we're going to do something anyway, and we'll be over in Issa Daraisa. So the Marsham says, the heck with you, I don't have to worry about that, I don't play that game. And quotes from the Akedah Sitzel, the Akedah Sitzel of Yitzhak Arama, from the Rishonim, and his commentary on Parshas Ve'era. Yitzhak Arama tells a story which he claims to be true, even though it's so hard to believe, but he says it's true. He says there was a community in which there were nice, well, I shouldn't say such nice, but there were some not-so-nice Beis Yaakov girls, single girls, who were acting as zonos for the single boys in the neighborhood. So you imagine, pick a neighborhood, I'm not going to give any names, someone should get insulted, one of the nice big firm communities wherever you come from, and all of a sudden the rabbis find out that the boys and the girls are doing stuff they shouldn't be doing. And you would imagine, what were they going to do? They're going to have a big kinus, kids at risk, bring in guest speakers, have a meeting with all the principals, it's a crisis. No, in this community, what do they decide to do? They wanted to give a pras, an award, to the girls. It's a firm community. Why? Because if it would, at least with these girls, they're only single. How bad is that of it? But if it wouldn't be for these girls, then the boys would be doing something worse. They'd be with HSH, they'd be with married women, or they would be with non-Jewish women. So they had this idea that maybe it's not such a bad thing. This is what they said to Rav Yitzchak Arama. And he said, are you completely out of your minds? And he makes the following principle, key just to read the underlying parts. Afilu, the last line of the first side. Ki afilu chet katan shenaseh v'rshus bezdin, godol mechet chamor shenaseh shelo v'rshus bezdin. Powerful, powerful words. Says the Yitzchak Arama, says the Marsham. Yitzchak Arama, the Akedah Yitzchak, does not quote the concept of Haliteu, but when the Marsham quotes the Akedah Yitzchak, he says, this is pshat and Haliteu. Namely, you know what Haliteo means? Haliteo means, yes, I care. And in theory, I don't want you to do any Averas. I don't care who you are. Of course I care about you. But in some cases, the way I'm going to stop you from doing Avera X is by giving you a Hechsher to Avera Y. That's what these people wanted. But we should somehow give our stamp of approval to the single boys and single girls, because we save them from a worse Avera. Yes, on some level, I'm happy they're not doing the worst Avera. But I can't give a Hechsher to something which is anyway Usher just to save them because they're otherwise they're doing worse. Beautiful line here. Chet katan, a smaller quote chet. But to be done with Rishus Bezdin, to somehow pretend that that's allowed? that's worse than doing something much more serious, or at least knowing that it's wrong. The honesty and the corruption of the halachic process is much more of a systemic and serious problem than private individuals doing something wrong. Or as I saw some other achronim who had a similar idea, they said, we have to save the rabbim even if it doesn't help, even if it hurts the yachid. Yes, for the yachid it would help if we made them only do nisur derabanan. But I can't tell the whole rabbim that this is mutter, it's not mutter. If you turn the page, that Sitz Eliezer has the same tshuva. Sitz Eliezer was one who was asked about opening up the factory on Shabbos, and someone, I can't remember who, somebody raised their hand to be yeshiva, said, what could be wrong with that? Why would we, the rabbi, work with me, let's make the machines, we're going to go to, Machon Somet and Alon Shvut, and we're going to get the Groma machines, we'll get all the technology and the halacha, and we'll have only Goyim working in the store, and I'll keep my factory open only in the Siddur Rabbanans. If not, I'm keeping it open, and I'm going to bring all my Jewish employees in, they'll be over Siddur Isis. Says that it sits Eliezer, you do what you want to do, but we have to do what we have to do. And he has a line here, he says in the opening words, Osir Lefiyani Yazdaiti, Shebezin Yidnulo Gushpanka. That's a great word. A Gushpanka is a hechsher, a stamp of approval. Bezdin cannot give the stamp of approval to an Isser, even if they're doing it for the best of reasons, because they want to prevent a more serious Isser. You're going to be in violation of Isser Daraisis? That's your problem, and you'll answer for it. The Bezdin cannot be held hostage, cannot be intimidated, and somehow bribed into giving a heter for something kal, even if it's to save something more chum. So here you have a completely different approach now. From Arsham, the case, it's called Tzitzeliezer. So yes, in theory, one-on-one, we always care about people. Even we care about Rishoyim. And who knows? They don't address it, but maybe they would even think you'd have to give up money for that. I don't know. But they say that Halitayos Kamerich is a different principle. And that is that Halitayos Kamerich is in our case. If I would put up the sign that says Kerem Ravai, Arla, even though I'm not, even this is the Chiddush, this is the junk, even though I'm not a Bezdin, but by me doing it, it's as if, it's tantamount, it's Ki'ilu, I'm saying there's nothing wrong with stealing, so by the way, make sure it's all glad kosher. It would be like advertising at the jail, Daf Yomi Minyan three times a day. Since it's an invitation, there's nothing wrong with being in jail. How could I sign up Orla? It's as if I'm saying, it's mamish tantamount to say nothing wrong with stealing, just make sure you're not straight, and I'm giving you a warning. Take that fruit over there, not this fruit over there. What kind of business is that? I should be chayav to do that. That's as if we're saying, if the halacha would require it, if we held the Tanakamas in the Shulchan Gamliel, that'd be the halacha endorsing the stealing. Impossible. Time is late. As I just mentioned to you briefly, two nafkaminas, and then we'll end with the Revenge of the Nerds case. I didn't forget. Quickly, in number six, this psak of Rav Shulman Gamliel, which we're passing on, Chayatel Hirsch of Yomus. So the pashtus is, of course we don't want him to steal, and we don't want him to eat Arla. But, for whatever reason, we've just discussed, we're not chayiv to worry about the Arla. Right? That's the pashtus. We don't want him to eat it. It's just we're not chayiv to stop him. I saw two Makoros, the Meiri in Baba Kama, and the Rosh Sir Liao in his commentary on Rashas, in his commentary on the page in the Yerushalmi, the parallel Yerushalmi in Maaser in Demai, the Rashas and the Meiri both disagree. They have unbelievable shittos. Says the Meiri, we hope he eats the Kerem Ravai, because that way he'll be Yishtarshu Bachet, Yochlu Dover. He'll be somehow entrapped in Chet. The Russia will become a bigger Russia. And what's the implication? He'll burn, baby, burn, even more one day. Or the Rosh Taleah doesn't leave it to our imagination. He says, more of Eris, even better. Let him die fast. Let him get punished fast. More of Eris, the bigger Russia will be. Very extreme. The only two who say this. So I thought that this Lachor is connected to the same Machlokas. If you hold that fundamentally we care about everybody, including the Rishayim, it's just that in Haliteu there's a patur because it's money, or because it's going to give a hechsher, or because I don't have to assume people are Rishayim. So that's a patur to let him eat. But we don't hope he eats, of course not. The only way it makes any sense to say what the Meiri says and what the Rishah says is if you first assume like who? Like the Shach and the Beis Yitzchak. That fundamentally, if they don't care about us, we don't care about them. You want to be a Russia? That's fine. It's your business. The Jew, Arvus, stops there. We don't have to care about you. And you could have said that without saying we hope you eat. I'm not saying if you hold like a shop, you have to hold like the Jew. But to say another direction, if you hold like the Meiri, you have to hold like the Shach. Because if you held of any of the other approaches to Haliteu, those are way too modest. And they're saying something very, very extreme. Number two is the Perush Mishnayos and the Rambam. The Rambam makes the point that the first Aveira, the Gezel, is more Chomer. It's a little bit different than one of the other Mekoros we saw. The Rambam, when he quotes this halacha, says, why do we not care about Haliteu or Yamos? Because anyway, he's already done Gezel, and Gezel is Avon Chomer. So there's others, the Gilyan Marsha, and R' Moshe Feinstein and Achuva and Negros Moshe, all make this point as well. That once a person is doing a very serious Aveira, Haliteu or Rosh HaVyamos means I don't have to worry, I don't have to be responsible that he's going to do a lesser Aveira. What's the pshat? Because they hold, once he's decided, and I think this was mentioned before, I don't remember who said it, was it you who said it? That if he's already a Ganav, why should I assume he even cares about Kashrus? Somebody said that before. That's what R' Moshe Feinstein says. And that's what the Gilyan Marsha says, more or less. R' Moshe is explicit. That once a person does one Aveira, I can assume that he's already telling me that, you know, at least on this level and lower, you know, I don't care about it. So if he doesn't care, why should I care? He's already a Ganav, he doesn't care about other things. So why should I care about him? I shouldn't have to be firmer about, you know, I should worry more about his spiritual life than he should worry about himself. He's telling us he doesn't care. He already had an Avon Chamor. I don't have to worry about an Avon that's slightly less Chamor. However, we saw already a number of Achron who clearly disagree. Right? The Radvaz for sure disagrees with that, and the Tzitz Eliezer, and both of those cases with the factory or the Shavua, right? The halacha is that Shavua is a Chamor Mimamo. So there, we're saying if he's a ganav, he did a relatively less avera, we have to care about maybe he'll do the more chomer avera. That's the exact opposite direction from the Rambam and the Perush Mishnayos and Moshe Feinstein. They said, no, Haliteu only kicks in if he does the chomer avera first. Then I can not care about if he doesn't want to care about his more mekel avera. But the Radvaz and Tzitz Eliezer for sure, they apply Haliteu in the opposite direction. When he starts off with the more kal avera, he's willing to do Isser Derabanan. Do I have to worry he's going to do this to Daraisa? No, Haliteu Rosh HaYomos. I thought Lachor is, again, it's the same thing. If you're going with that Shach Beis Yitzchak approach, that fundamentally certain people are such Rishoyim that they're Mufka from Arvus, they start speaking Mechutz Lamachaneh to some extent, so then it makes sense what the Rambam was saying. You know, you have to do something extreme to get yourself kicked out of the team. Ovon Chomor, as the Rambam says. Then if you do something so bad, then you become like the Rambam, like the Shach, like Beis Yitzchak, you're off the team. And then we don't have to care about what happens to you after. But if anyway all you're doing is an Avon Kal, would you say that that's enough to make you so Mufka that you're Yisrael Mumra I don't even care about? A little bit less likely. A little bit less likely. So let's conclude now with the Revenge of the Nerds case. So the true story is that this Shaila was asked to Rav Zilberstein. As I mentioned, Rav Zilberstein answered, was asked, is it mutter for the nerd to put the poison in the salami sandwich? Rav Zilberstein said, not only is it mutter, it's a mitzvah, Haliteu l'Rosh HaVayomos. An astonishing psak. He won the nerd vote forever. Sticking up for those kids who've been beat up all those years, says Rav Zilberstein, take your revenge on the cool kid. Take your revenge against the athletes and the pretty boys. All nerds unite. Put your poison in your sandwich. Haliteu l'Rosh HaVayomos. And this psak started getting out. People started publicizing it. It became very, very controversial. Some people wrote articles. Some people sent letters. And he has a son-in-law who wrote a sefer on an unrelated topic. And in the back of the sefer, he included his father-in-law's like 20-page kuntras called Kuntras Haliteu l'Rosh HaVayomos, which is all about this Revenge of the Nerds case, where Rav Zilberstein tries to defend himself. One of the points he makes, is he says, listen, the words in the Gemara are not like Stam, we don't have to worry about him. And it's no, the Gemara is Haliteu l'Rosh HaVayomos. As I tried to mention to you in the beginning of this year, I said it a few times, Haliteu, we don't exactly know how to translate it, but one thing we know, it's a strong lashon. The way Esav used it, it's a strong, emphatic, there's an exclamation point on that sentence. Haliteu! And Haliteu no min adom adom azeh. Like in an email now, we would put it like in caps. That's how we communicate in the 21st century. So, says Zilberstein, Pashtei the Kra. You see already that the word Halitei was not just like Stama Heter. It's something more aggressive than that. You can even give... So as he himself, I'm not the first person who found this, and I think his answer is very, very weak. This goes mamish against the Chazon Ish. Second chat, same piece, but a different point. The Chazon Ish says explicitly, last verse on your page, Hod Omer Haliteu, Hu Lishna Ba'alma. It's not meant to be taken in any way literally. We're not supposed to infer from this that I can do a more active Ma'aseh Biyadayim to the Rasha. It just means, says Chazon Ish, that I don't have to worry about being Matzah from Avera. I can be passive and not intervene to help him. But don't think, says the Chazon Ish, that because of the Lashon of Haliteu, that it means that I can anyway actively or aggressively hurt him. Why would I have thought that? Because Enechanami, Pashtei Dekra, is very aggressive. Says Chazon Ish, Lashon of Alma, it's not meant to be taken that way. In part, built his heter, or his mitzvah, whatever you want to call it, based on that. He also quoted the Meiri and the Rosh Tzurliyahu. But again, with great respect, I don't understand that either. Because even though it's true that the Meiri and the Rosh Tzurliyahu are the two most extreme sources we saw, Meheri, he should die, he should be Yashir Shpechet, we want him to eat the Arla, let him. But no one, the Meiri, the Meir said, no one said I could even lay a pinky on him. Who should kill him fast? Not me and my poison. So. They're about, but they're about to show. Think, if he'll do lots of avarice, I'm praying that Hashem will kill him fast. So if you would tell me, theoretically, should the nerd daven every day, let him steal my sandwich, let him get more avarice, let him die faster. Oh, so I would have said that sounds a little extreme. But then you could have said to me, yeah, but that's what the Rosh Tzurliyahu says. That's what, and I was like, oh, taka. Whether the Meiri's right or not, I don't know, but at least you can hang your head on the Meiri. But how do you go from the Meiri and the Rosh Tzurliyahu to saying I can even put poison in his sandwich? I'll close with the following. It just shows you that even though the Makoros could theoretically be argued, it really comes from a fundamental different mindset. So my opinion is like, it seems to be that most people have heard this, with all due respect, I think it's a crazy psak. I think it would be a vera gemur to do what this kid did. Put the poison in. But just to end with this, just to show you how people have different perspectives, Rav Zilberstein says that once he was walking home from davening, a Talmud Chacham came over to him and said, I heard about this psak, but the nerdy kid, who told you this? How do you know this, such a thing? So Zilberstein writes, I said back to him, when you go home today and you want to have breakfast, you're going to turn on the faucet. Who said you could do that? Who said you could pour yourself a cup of coffee in your house? So the guy looked at him like he was crazy. Who said? Obviously, it's my house, it's my property, I can do what I want. Zilberstein said, exactly, it's my bologna sandwich, I can do what I want. Who told him to take my bologna sandwich? I can do what I want on my bologna sandwich. So he's starting with that hanacha, that it's so obvious that it should be mutter, and I plead guilty, like the rest of the world, I think it's so obvious that it's also. So we don't really ever meet in the middle. I just give you one final story, but I wish I could have given you a different story. So I published a sefer almost the Chanukah, will be 8 years ago, and I have a whole essay, one of the simanim in the sefer is this sugya of Halakha Lashon Yomus. And the last section of the article, of the piece in the sefer, is this piece of Zilberstein and Lanius Daiti, why I thought that it wasn't correct. So in our shul in Baltimore, there was a member whose father, as far as I know, still alive and well, who retired after many years living in Boston, retired to Bnei Brak, and he lives in Zilberstein's community. So once a year or so, my congregant would go to visit his father, and over the years had developed a relationship with Zilberstein. So when he got a copy of my sefer and he read it, he was so excited. He says, oh, next time I'm going to bring it. He asked me for a copy. I inscribed it to Rav Zilberstein. This is going to be 5 or 6 years. So I'm going to bring it to him, and hopefully maybe he'll have a response. Maybe he'll write to you. So when he came back from Eretz Yisrael, I was so excited. I was on eggshells. You know, what happened? You know, I hear what it was. It's the young little rabbi from Baltimore. Rav Zilberstein's big postseg. Rav Yashiv's son-in-law. He's going to get my sefer. What's he going to say? So I said, no, I'm wrong. What happened? He goes, they wouldn't let me in. What? He goes, yeah, you know, like the guards at the door. So they asked me who was I. I told them who I was. They asked me, what is this, a sefer? And I told them why I was bringing it. Because I have a rav in Baltimore, my rav at home. And he wrote a piece where he was arguing on the Rav Zilberstein. I want to show it to him. And they said to me, it's not the covenant. You shouldn't bring in a sefer that argues with the rav. And they wouldn't let me come in. Or at least they wouldn't let me bring the sefer in. So I hold, without any doubt, that that's one of the many examples in life where the guards at the gate don't know what they're doing. And I have no doubt that Rav Zilberstein, who was a big tzaddik and a talmid chacham, but he wouldn't agree with me, probably. But that's Macham Kosh Torah. He wouldn't have found it disrespectful that someone published an article disagreeing with him. I thought it was very, I don't even know what the right word is, narrow-minded or worse, that they wouldn't let the Sefer in. And I'm not choshish that he would have endorsed that at all, frankly. I think if I would see him and give him the Sefer, he would appreciate it, and then tell me why he thinks I'm wrong. Which would be fine too. I wouldn't be insulted either. That's Darak Bashal Torah. So that's, I wish I could have told you. I would have loved it in 1 year I could end the shtir with, and I spoke to the Milberstein, or he wrote me a letter or whatever. But so far the Sefer hasn't gotten it. So I was going to Bnei Brak. I'll give you a copy. If you can get by the guards, I'll give you a free one for yourself. Have a good job.